All right, so you ready?
Oh, of course, always. I'm like a battery for you. I'm ever ready.
Hey, Dan.
Hey, Josh.
You want a fun Josh fact?
Yeah, I want you to share some information with myself and our listeners. I think there is a significant and relative fact that is about to be shared with the world.
Yeah, the Fleischer cartoons were debuted on my birthday, September 26th,
41.
1941. Yeah.
Not and Josh is not actually 80 some odd years old. He was born in a different year, just to be clear. Yeah. He is not Superman. Yeah.
No, I'm not. It was September 26th, 1982, when
Yeah.
I came into the world.
Wow, my sister's birthday is on the 28th of September,
Really?
1982. Yeah, so you guys are real close. To think I could have had you instead of her.
Yeah, right. Well, you mean we're kind of brothers,
I
so
got you now. That's all that matters.
And I'm going to be the one to reference Star Trek this week because guess what else premiered on my birthday?
Let's hear it.
Star Trek Enterprise
It's
with
been a long road.
Let's not go there. Let's
Yeah.
not do
Oh, sorry. You
that.
know I have to sing, man. It's in my heart. The
I
faith
know,
of
I
my
know.
heart.
Yeah. So yeah, man, that's my little fun fact
I
about
love
these
it.
cartoons. I think it's great, man. I mean, my favorite franchise premiered on my birthday and my favorite character, you know?
It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Yeah. It
Yeah.
was like I was meant to be a Star Trek Superman nerd.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, aren't we all, though? I mean,
Yeah, for sure.
well, that's, thanks for sharing that because, yeah, I love. It's all about how we can relate to the world and the things we love, and when those fun little things happen, it's your own unique perspective into the universe, and you get to have that, and that's great.
Exactly. And now everybody knows my birthday. So if you want to send gifts,
Yep. Oh, we shamelessly accept money.
Yeah,
We like
exactly.
money, and if you want to give us money, we'll make that available to you. And if you want to ever give us enough money that we can just talk about Superman all day, we will take that money also.
Yeah, that's the dream.
Do what you love and love what you do.
Josh, Dan, and
Superman!
Hello, and welcome back, everybody. It's Josh, Dan, and Superman.
Dun, dun, dun,
I'm
dun.
Josh. Yep, da 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 da.
I'm Dan.
How's it going, Dan?
Oh man. I missed you last week, so I'm glad we're able to make up for it this week and get back on track and talk about our favorite superhero, the one and only Man of Steel. The one and only man of Doc
Yeah,
Pat.
it's it seems like not, no. Silly. No, but it seems like it's been a while, you know? The listeners don't know that we pretty much recorded the last two episodes. I mean, pretty much back to back. Our episode with Jake, and then a couple days later, we did the episode with Steve. And then it was like it's been like 3 weeks since we like
Well,
sat down and did this.
right. So what he's really trying to say there, dear listener, is that we rested on our laurels and got a little lazy, and then oops, the time disappeared because it's fucking linear.
Yeah. Well, I also started a new job too, so
Oh,
I've had
right.
that
Gainful
going on.
employment, sustaining your family. I mean,
Yeah,
you
you know.
selfish bastard. Where
I know, right?
the internet demands content. Feed the algorithm, not your dummy.
But I'm just glad that we're back. You know, we're back. We don't have a guest this week, so I mean, it feels like I can kind of, you know, put my comfies on,
I
you
know you're
know.
naked, and it's great to see you naked again.
Hey, don't tell them that. This is going to turn into a weird show if we start saying that
Wow, chicken brown cow.
kind of stuff.
It's
So
already a
yeah, we're
weird show.
back. We're back into it. This week we're going to be talking about the Fleischer cartoons, the Fleischer Studios cartoons of the 1940s. You know, I just, I loved these, Dan. I had such a great time watching these. And I know I sound like a broken record. I say that every time we talk about Superman, I'm just, you know, gushing over, you know, this superhero.
Well, and what I think too, I think about that too. And I mean, as we've talked about this between you and I and prepped for shows and just decided that, you know, this is something that we wanted to celebrate. Obviously I've gotten a lot more focused into Superman as a, and what it has meant for him to be a part of my life. But especially, you know, preparing for these things and just re-upping that love. And, you know, we talk about behind the scenes, we talk about how we want to approach our celebration of this. And I want everyone to remember out in the audience that it is a celebration. We're not here to criticize. And so, you know, if we miss a particular take on your version of the Man of Steel, then maybe, you know, we have reasons why we might, because we want to celebrate. And here we are to celebrate Max Fleischer. Well, Fleischer Studios, we'll get into that too. Fleischer Brothers history with this. But what I really wanted to get to the point was, these cartoons are, I think, the bedrock of, even in their near 80 years old now, they are the bedrock of the modern look for Superman.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's,
I mean, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of look come before what was in the comics, but, you know, we see the, you can look at the Fleischer costume and you know that's Superman. You know, if you saw like the costume from the first issue of Action Comics, yeah, you could draw the through line, but a lot of kids who know Superman these days would look at that and maybe not get that it's Superman. You look at these Fleischer designs and no doubt who that is.
Yeah, and let's talk about the suit. The Fleischer suit is so great. It's mm-hmm. just, it's iconic, man. And like you said, in the comics, you know, which had come out just a few years prior to what, you know, we're talking about now, the S wasn't the crest that we know today until mm-hmm. these cartoons came out. And you know, it's a little bit different. It's got the black background and everything, but I mean, it's the first time that we saw the Superman crest, the crest of Kal-El, even though it wasn't, you know,
it didn't mean hope yet.
It didn't mean hope yet. Exactly.
It was still just an S.
But yeah, man, that suit, I love everything about it. And recently we saw Tyler Hoechlin in it and mm-hmm. Superman and Lois, which was such a great callback.
Well, and the way they, you know, and yes, we will. You better believe Superman and Lois is on the list of things to celebrate, y'all, because that show is killing it.
Yes, it is.
That moment in the opening, spoiler alert, go watch pilot for Superman and Lois. 3, 2, 1. Okay, back. We are for you, those who went to save the spoiler. And we see Tyler in a combo of the classic scene from the cover, but in the Fleischer era suit that my mom made for me.
Yeah.
So here we are, 2021, you know, easily 80 years on the button almost. These came out like the 41, right? These came out around 1941. And so here we are 80 years later, still establishing Superman's breakout into the world in that suit.
You know? Yep. Something it just shows you how iconic it is, man. You know, mm-hmm. yeah. I mean, we're still referencing it in the media that we have today. So obviously it made an impact.
And I'll note too, you know, as y'all, by the way, Twitter account is at Josh, Dan, and Supes. And Josh and I take turns putting up awesome stuff about Superman on there on the daily. And anytime, you know, the Fleischer look is brought up, I mean, it's nothing but positives about, you know, I don't think I've ever heard anyone complain about the Fleischer suit.
Right. I posted the other day, there was fan edits of Christopher Reeve and Henry Cavill in the Fleischer suit. Those were cool, man. Those were very,
very cool. And I love that stuff too. You know, when you're in a positive side of any fandom and you can find those people who are just having fun with it like you are, and you know, you see these artists who, you know, aren't making their living at creating this stuff, but they just want to, they know that they would like to see that, and they can expect that we would like to see that too. And to have that fun stuff out there, it's just, it's, you know, on the daily, it's nice.
Yeah, it's fun. So, Fleischer Studios. While I was doing research for this, you know, for this podcast, I actually watched some Popeye. I watched that feature.
You did.
I watched that feature, Mr. Bug Goes to Town, which, wow, that was ahead of his time, man. I mean, that was
I will have to dig that up.
Man, it's so cool. It's like Bug's Life or Ants. I mean, but, you know, 80 years ago. I mean, so ahead of its time. These guys had it going on, man. They were the ones that invented the rotoscope, which is basically just filming something and then tracing it for animation, which gives it a very fluid look. Some of the early stuff they did, I saw some. Did you see any of the Coco the Clown, where it was mixed animation? It's very cool, man. It's mixed animation. Max Fleischer would film himself, and then he would draw the clown like interacting with him. And for it being, I think it was actually in the 30s, for it being the 1930s, it's just like so ahead of its time. I mean, this was stuff that nobody had seen before, you know?
Well, and let's just take a bit of, we'll open that window to history just a little bit more and think about the time period in which these films were being produced, you know, early, late 30s, early 40s. Movies had only been talking for like 9 years or something. I mean, this is novel filmmaking. The reason these techniques hadn't been used before is because they ain't nobody ever had to use them before. Nobody had to invent them because the media was so new. I mean, animation had been around a little bit. You know, you could do the Nickelodeon things and the flip books. And I mean, we understood the persistence of image and how that affected the brain, and you know, we could make moving pictures. But the way to produce these things, especially something with fantastical elements, like where a man needs to jump, leap a tall building in a single bound, you know, approaching that with this rotoscoping, like you said, it gives it a sense of, you can tell there's something in it that isn't typical of animation, and you can kind of feel that.
Yeah, I think you can definitely feel it. Just pop
on an analog record.
Yeah. but just the attention to detail as well. I had watched a little documentary about, you know, how they made these, and they did the rotoscoping and they did the tracing, but then they had animators whose only job was to watch what they had finalized and see if there was maybe one frame that they could add in to make it more fluid, you know. And you can even see it, like if you go back and watch the early Disney stuff, it doesn't seem as fluid as what the Fleischers were doing. And it just, you know, we'll get into what happened with them. It seems a little unclear. There was a lot of infighting and, you know, brothers and family and, you know, family what? And business brothers doesn't fight? Always mix. What? Yeah. But it just, it makes me think, like, what did we miss out on? What if they had gone strong and the Fleischers were a name like Disney today? What content would we be getting? Because, man, it's just the stuff they were putting out was just awesome.
Well, and, you know, I think that's another thing, too, to kind of, you know, remind ourselves of what it was like earlier in these heydays of new film making studios, things like that. You know, you have the Warner Brothers, you have the Fleischer Brothers, you have Disney, and who knows how many other untold small animation studios out there. And, you know, where we are today, everything is owned by Disney or Sony. That's just, or Apple. But that's just about it. And what you noted, like, you know, Disney of the day, Snow White was done with rotoscoping. A lot of what Snow White was done in rotoscoping, but I feel like there was more fluidity, which is a fun word to say, in these Fleischers than there were of other anime. And that's easy to do because they're short, you know, we're not making a feature length film with thousands and thousands and thousands of cells. But at the same time, you know, just wanting to take that care, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. Another thing with the Fleischers is they kind of seemed like the Bad News Bears almost, you know, to, if you compare them to Disney. Disney's making Snow White and, you know, all these Bambi and, you know, birds are chirping and everybody's singing. But then, you know, you mirror that with the Fleischers, who are doing Popeye, who's, you know, fighting Bluto. And it just, they were, you know, originally from but their studios were in New York, and you can kind of feel their grittiness and their, you know, urbanness. Like, I don't know. It doesn't seem as sunshine and rainbows as Disney was.
Well, and you know, to that point too, the look of these stories, it's not Batman the Animated Series level dark, but it is a definite deep, you know, it's a deeper tone in the and a lot of these stories take place seemingly in the evening. You know, the lights are down, it's a little bit low, but it's not the bright, shiny, you know, oversaturated animation that gets the kids' attention, as it were. I don't know a lot about the artistic technique they did while drawing these, but I get that very much, that, you know, that darker tone vibe from it. And two, you know, the character of Superman was still very young at this point. Not a lot of things have been sorted about what he is capable of. And so, you know, that's kind of paralleling what these studios were trying to do with, you know, the newness of the character itself. Everybody's pushing limits.
Yeah. Well, like you said, the tone of these Fleischer cartoons is darker than what you would expect of a superhero cartoon in this age. Metropolis really does kind of feel like New York. I think you can you can feel their the fact that they're from New York, and even though they were doing these from their Miami studios, you can kind of feel the urbanness, like I said earlier. But to the point that you just made, that they were still kind of trying to flesh out the character. Did you know that the Fleischers were the ones that actually gave Superman his flight? They didn't necessarily like the way that he looked just jumping around. So they actually had a meeting with DC Comics at the time. It was National Comics, I think, and asked if they could make him fly. And they were like, yeah, sure, that sounds good. So these guys are actually responsible for giving
his
Superman
most iconic
flight.
Power. Yeah,
exactly.
The thing he's most known for. That'd be like finding out that Josh Paddock was responsible for these stunning good looks on Dan Decker. It's just how do you draw that line, man? You know, I understand you went to the people in charge, and you're like, listen, we got to get Dan these looks, okay? And that's how deals are made, y'all. That's how deals are made. No, that's fascinating because. Oh man, we could do a whole episode on the Superman's OP. It's no fun to watch. But you know, seeing this as an early progression of the powers established that Superman has versus the powers established that we know he has now, and that whole breadth of whatever the comic book demanded in between, you know, if Superman needed to shoot, you know, daffodil lasers for that particular comic book, then that was going to be a new power Superman had. And then here in 2021, we're like, no, man, daffodil lasers make total sense because the sun is yellow and daffodils are yellow also. But no, that's an interesting point because these progression of powers, you know, he has gotten or was being made to be more and more powerful and, you know, to accomplish these greater and greater things because of that. How do you beat the most powerful thing in existence? Right. Are there any other of his high end powers that came from this? Because that led directly into like the Superman serials and the powers that we would see him have in the Reeves TV show, et cetera, and so on.
Yeah. I don't think that they gave him any other powers, but I mean, flight's a pretty big one. I don't know when he got laser eyes, but I don't think we see that in the cartoons. I don't think we saw him in the serials either. We did see his X-ray vision.
Yeah. Well, I was talking to someone else the other day about that, and I was like, I know that we see his X-ray vision. Oh, to Andy on the Great Derelict podcast, where your gracious Dan host was a guest on the Great Derelict podcast. Go listen to that, and we talked about Superman on there as well. So, you know, I mean, you ask Josh and I to talk about Superman and sit down for a couple hours because we'll entertain you.
I did listen to that episode. It was a pretty fun little episode, man.
Andy and his wife are great. Yeah, he's good. He's good stuff. So y'all go check that out, The Great Derelict. We'll get our own little podcast syndication network going here. I was looking over my list here. I felt like these, they're short, but I felt like the list of them, the number of them was awfully succinct. And so I was looking up the list on one resource here, and it shows 17 different titled episodes. But in my media delivery platform of choice, they lumped them all together to whittle it down to 8 different pieces of content. So some of these are doubled up, you know how these were presented? Were they part of like the opening reel to features, or how was the world brought to know about these?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure these were included with features. I think that's pretty much at the time the only way they could have been presented.
Well, they weren't on TV. You
know, they weren't on TV. Yeah, no.
Nothing was on TV. It was bad back then.
I was actually going to ask you the same question because I wasn't exactly sure. I'm assuming these were put before features. That's the only thing I can come up with.
Well, all I can see here now is that they were, when and how they were made available on home video. Speaking of, we talked just a little bit before pressing record about the ever presence of Superman and, you know, our lives especially, but kind of how like when I was young, there was no barrier or wall between content. It was, if it had Superman in it, that was for me. And so these older cartoons and the George Reeves show all played in syndication in the afternoons when I was young. So, you know, these cartoons were just another kind of cartoon, another name, that was on in my cartoon rotation. Outside of that, like I didn't have a sense that they were on, you know, any other way. These are just cartoons that are on in the afternoon. Come to find out, this is some groundbreaking stuff I was witness to.
Yeah, I think pretty much the same for me. It would have been Saturday morning for me. And you know, just kind of like you said, just there from early childhood. You know, I remember these images as I was watching them as an adult. I was like, wow, this really brings me back to being a kid. I remember seeing these things and being just enamored and amazed by this Superman. You know,
well, and as you were mentioning that, like I just started thinking about how much stays the same. Like you hear them in that tinny, you know, low res recording sound when they play the theme in these cartoons, but it is still, when you hear those notes, it still makes you think of Superman because it's so intertwined. And then I think musically, you know, obviously John Williams being the mastermind that he is, he went back. I'm sure he did his homework with regards to the music that came associated with Superman before, because you hear these notes carry forward into Reeves and then forward into the 1978 movie. It's something about how that fanfare, just that, you know, that opening ba-ba-da-ba trumpet has itself become associated with this character.
Yeah, well, we talked about that a little bit with Jake when we had him on to talk about the George Reeves series. It's the same thing. Like you can hear the references that John Williams was making in his score that has become timeless and become what you think about when you think about Superman. You think about that score, but this had the score for this has a little bit more big band feel to it. You know, but you can still hear the similarities, and it's just that it's very cool. It's very cool. Another thing, I mean, these guys had all kinds of money to play with to make these things.
Yeah. I mean, these were like budgeted at 100 grand per episode or something.
Per episode.
Which is an insane amount of money then. And then, I mean, it's an insane amount of money now. Please someone give me $100,000. But also back then, that's like $500,000 or something. It's like a lot of money.
Well, actually, on Wikipedia, it says $100,000. I did. Well, I didn't do the math. Wikipedia did it for me. But $100,000 in 2016 money would have been $1.7 million.
Good, Scoob.
So these guys basically had $2 million to play with for a 10-minute short.
Yeah.
So yeah. Well, what I read was, is they had just, you know, they were obviously pretty famous for Popeye and Betty Boop. They had just done the Gulliver's Travels movie. They had just finished their, they were in production for their Mr. Bug Goes to Town, and they didn't want to take on Superman. Paramount came to them and said, we want you to do Superman. And they didn't want to do it. They wanted to focus on their own IP and do their own thing. And so their plan was, let's just give them a figure that they're just going to, no way, we're not going to give you that. You know, so they're like, yeah, let's ask him for $100,000 an episode. And, you know, they'll turn us down. And they didn't turn them down. So they were like, well, I guess we're making Superman now.
That hits on something that you and I need to figure out, friend, and that is how to make a how to shoot ourselves in the foot with $1.6 million. Yeah. Because I mean, that sounds like that's what they did.
That's exactly what they did. And
okay, well, at least now I can afford to have my foot replaced. That's an impressive, I mean, that's what they call folding money, a little spreading around town money, you know, a little spending change, you know, no big deal.
Well, I mean, you can see it in the production, you know, you look at it and you can tell that they had time to do these, that they had the resources to do them. They just look so good. And that's the one thing that surprised me going back and watching them as an adult. I kind of expected them to be kind of, I don't know, dated, you know, but someone could release these now and I would say, wow, this is really good. You know?
Oh yeah. No, you, if someone went through and, you know, if we had the original negs or whatever it might be to go through and just, you know, do the restorative touch up on these things and, you know, take some of the dirt and the, and brighten up a little bit of the colors and stuff, just to kind of bring it into a means to which we can be presented today. It would hold up. It would hold up incredibly well, visually. There are some story elements that cannot hold up today.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate. But also propaganda at the time. That's what it was.
Yeah, that brings up a good point. So the first, I think it's 9 episodes. Let me check that. Yeah, the first 9 episodes were done by the Fleischer brothers. They had their own studio. They had their own, you know, employees, animators, whatever. They made these first 9 cartoons. And like I said earlier, there was infighting, their brothers, their family. It didn't work out. It's kind of hazy what actually happened. But Fleischer Studios in 1942 was dissolved. It was no more. And it was taken over by Famous Pictures, which I think ended up being... never mind. But anyway, so then the last, 10 through 17 episodes were not done by the Fleischer brothers, even though they're still considered the Fleischer cartoons. They were done by a different studio. So if you look at the credits on the last cartoons, the Fleischers were not involved anymore.
I'm just sitting here as you read. I'm going through and I read the first title, the actual title for the episode that Famous was first responsible for.
It's extremely racist. Yeah, it's extremely racist, man.
Yeah. Woo! I did not see that until just now, and it took me aback because, like, the content. I mean, you know, it can't be forgiven or excused. It just has to be noted as a product of its time, you know.
Yeah, it is what it is.
What I will take a positive away from is how it intentionally depicts Superman active in world events at the time, contemporaneous world events, because it's often the question of why doesn't Superman in the comics stop the Nazis? Well, because he can't stop the Nazis in the real world, and that will really confuse kids. You know, I saw Superman. I saw Superman beat Hitler. Why is Hitler still a problem? You know, and to preserve the fantasy for the children who need hope and something to look up to. Heroes have often been, you know, the comic book heroes have often been kept out of the contemporary events of the time, unless it's just something, you know, unignorable, like the events of 9/11, things like that, you know, where they incorporated the superheroes of New York City into the actual, you know, the actual event of that day, because that was going to change their landscape too. You can't then also still have Twin Towers in your New York City and your comic panels when they don't exist anymore. But yeah, you know, heroes being involved in their own realities and contemporary matters is not something that they tend to do. But this cartoon did not shy away from that.
No, it did
Superman
not.
Superman was stopping the Axis powers. We'll just pull that together. It was stopping the Axis powers and aiding the Allied war effort.
Yeah, it was definitely. That's the other thing is when Famous took over, you could there was a change in tone. Became very much propaganda. It was USA all the way, you know. I tend to
right,
like
buddy. USA all the way, buddy. You betcha.
I like the first nine way better than I like the last ones. They had more of kind of like a sci-fi feel to them. It was more fantastical.
Punching lasers, dude. Superman punches laser beams.
That's my favorite part. It's my favorite part of that episode.
And it draws back to the point that I always like to make that Superman is not overpowered. He is up to the task at hand, but he has to fight in these cartoons. He's not just going to win by default. And fighting the mad scientist in laser beam is one of the places where, like, you know, you see him wear down a little, and then he just pushes forward harder, and you know, eventually, of course, wins the day because he's Superman. But yeah, that very first thing, and then I thought when I was watching him. I thought it was just, you know, me being tired and something along those lines, but that tonal shift is noticeable if you watch them serial or in order, you can feel when the tone shifts.
You're not paying
attention.
Yeah. But I want to go back to punching laser beams, cause this is like one of my favorite parts.
Yeah. It's so good.
This is the mad scientist is what the episode is known as today. When it originally came out, it was the pilot. It was the first one they did. So it was just called Superman, but these days it's known as the mad scientist. And I love the fact that he punches the laser beam. It's coming at him. He, you know, deflects it, and he could take, you know, he could take some notes from like Prometheus or Game of Thrones. He doesn't zigzag. He goes straight into it, you know, and then as it's wearing him down, he decides, okay, I need to punch this laser beam. And yep. it's got that sound effect
the one you invented.
Yeah, it's my favorite sound, and he's punching a laser beam, and it's as he flies up. It cracks me up so much, man.
Oh, that's what we're here for. That's the stuff we live for, is watching Superman punch laser beams. You know, it's every bit of one of those, you know, watching him rise to the challenge moments, like when he has to save the plane and Superman returns, and you know, you get to see him struggle to win. It isn't just gimme, and yeah, it's one of those things where you're like, well, this is obviously ridiculous, and I'm here for it.
Yeah, I love it too in that episode where when he gets to the laser beam, he ties it in a bow, you know.
Yeah.
And it's such a Superman thing to do, and it's such a like 1930s 40s comic or cartoon thing to do, would be to tie in a bow like that, and of course, you know, it backfires and the whole place explodes and all that. There's something about it. When I saw that, I grinned from ear to ear. I was just like, wow, man, this makes me feel like a kid. This makes me feel like a kid watching cartoons on Saturday morning. I remember those tropes, those things that you would see, you know, in cartoons all the way up to when I was a kid and in the 80s and 90s, you know. It's just it's so great, man. I have so much joy with this one episode.
Oh, absolutely.
I love the fact that every episode starts with the newspaper trope, you know. Mm-hmm. You mm-hmm. see they give you the problem on the cover of the Daily Planet at the beginning of each episode. It's mad scientist is, you know, causing problems.
Plaguing Metropolis.
Yeah, exactly. Or there's a gem thief, you know, jewel thief, you know, is confounding the police, you know. It's just like every episode, they just set it up. Simple, easy, boom. You know, newspaper. Here we go. But you know,
lots of good storytelling shortcuts that help you know bring the viewer in and not leave you hanging, because yeah, we need to know what's going on. Why is Superman being super today? What's he got going on?
Yeah, I wondered if this was is this where that came from? That trope of newspapers, were they the first people to do it?
Oh yeah, the spinning newspaper headline trope.
Yeah. Because I mean,
yeah, I mean it's got to be early on, right?
Yeah, they had to be one of the first ones to use it. And I just, again, when I saw it and noticed that it was every episode, I was just like, wow, man, these guys really, they really had something, you know? They started all kinds of things. Superman flying, yeah. But anyway, I know I just got really excited about that, but it just makes me so happy. But
it's all easy to get excited about. That's why we're here. I mean, we got so excited we started a podcast. So
yeah, exactly. So talked about the Mad Scientist a little bit. One of my other favorite ones was the Billion Dollar Limited. Did you watch that one where they were moving gold to the treasury in the train? And, you know, of course, there's, you know, going to be someone who tries to hijack the train because it's, you know, Superman comic book. But there were a couple things about that. Go ahead.
I was going to say one of the things that I noted while watching that was how the guards are singularly handling massive bullion bars. And just carrying them like they don't weigh 300 pounds a piece.
Yeah, yeah.
Because a bullion bar weighs quite a lot, by the way, y'all. Not something that random human can pick up and move on their own very easily.
One of the things that I noticed in that episode was the thieves. They have a car, and they're all in the car, and of course they've all got the little, you know, the thing over their eyes with the holes in it, you know, the bandit look. But the car kind of transforms into this, like, it looks like the Batmobile, and it looks like the type of car that they had in the Batman the Animated Series, where it's like, you know, like that, you know, the look I'm talking about.
Roadster Duesenberg type look. It's a long stretch body with the curve over wheels, but it, you know, it looks like it's up to something.
Yeah, but I mean, it actually transforms, kind of like the fender goes up and they've got guns coming out, and they have, you know, the armor goes over the windows, and I'm like, wow, man, this was obviously the inspiration for, you know, the Batmobile. Keaton's.
Oh yeah, and then the Shields moment from Keaton's 89, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that is the Batmobile enabling its Shields sound effect officially.
This episode, Superman really does live up to the more powerful than the locomotive, because he actually becomes the locomotive at the end of it, and is just pulling the train and running along with it. I thought it was great. I was like, look, there
it's,
it is.
It's leg day for Superman, you know, so what else are you going to do? You know, he was like, oh, good. Now I don't have to go to the super gym and the super fortress of solitude to do my super leg day. I can just use this train.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, it's light. It's going to be a light day. I don't want to overdo it.
Yeah, but one of the other things I loved was the thieves were throwing what were they throwing at him? It's like gas, tear gas. They're throwing tear gas at him, and it, you know, it obviously isn't doing much. It makes him cough a little bit, but it's not stopping him or really deterring him that much.
I figure he probably coughs so they don't feel too bad. You know, he's just trying to help himself. Oh, that hurt a little. Sorry.
But I just love the one guy, because they've got a box of the tear gas and they're throwing it at him and it's not doing much. So the one guy just says, fuck it, picks up the box and throws it at him. And it just cracked me up. You know, it's like last ditch effort. Let's see if this will work.
Well, it makes more sense. That makes more sense than the other trope of the, you know, the seventh guy to try to empty his magazine against Superman after watching everybody else's bullets not work. Mine are gonna work. I mean, do you think you're the one? And so yeah, just to be like, well, let's see what happens, because you know, one at a time ain't working. And after, like, that's, and then the other side of that would be like, you know, the analogy would be like, if you could just pick the magazine and throw all your bullets at Superman at once and try that, that would be new. So that's what this guy did. He was like, one at a time ain't working. We're just gonna chuck the whole box of tear gas at Superman.
It's great, man. It didn't work out well for him.
Yeah.
No, it didn't. One of the other episodes that I really liked was the one that where the jewel thief had all the drones. Let's see. Let me get the episode list.
Oh, up. Those are great. Yeah.
The Mechanical Monsters was the name of that episode. But yeah, he had an evil lair, of course. And this guy, this jewel thief, had the mustache, you know, the evil mustache. This you one? Know? he didn't twirl it, but he had it.
Oh, you gotta twirl the evil mustache where it's not evil.
Yeah. But he would he had these drones that would fly into town and, you know, get his jewels. I don't know what I never understand the jewel thief trope. What are you going to do with these jewels?
What are you going to do with that? Yeah, I don't know. You got to, you know, that is the most labor intensive. It's got to be the most labor intensive fencing job in the world where, you know, okay, they know we took them from this store and they can track all this stuff, but I'm going to fence these jewels to somebody, and you know, like, go for the bank, dude, get the cash. You don't need some sort of exchange intermediary when you're dealing with stolen goods, you know. Steal the cash, don't steal the jewels.
Yeah. But I liked the design of these little monsters, and like I said, the mm-hmm. monsters, mechanical monsters,
the robots.
But yeah, they had like a little dump truck thing that came out of their back and they just filled it up, you know.
Yeah.
And then,
as you do.
Yeah, but like I said, the earlier episodes just had such a sci-fi feel to them, you know, and they were great little mechanical monsters. I loved them.
And those earlier ones, the ne'er-do-well was always, you know, like you said, kind of a sci-fi element and not necessarily something grounded in the real world compared to the back half of the stories.
Yeah. And Lois Lane in this episode is one of the classic Lois Lane deals, man. She gets herself into trouble. Clark tells her to stay put, and he goes and uses the phone to, you know, call Perry, which I never understand why they always call Perry White. Why don't they call the police or, you know, somebody else? It's always Perry, but anyway.
Because this isn't Gotham City. This is Metropolis, okay? Yeah. You don't call the police in Metropolis. We call Perry White. Have you met him?
So
no gruff.
So Clark tells her, like, you know, stay put. I'm going to go call Perry. And of course, Lois doesn't stay put because Lois never stays put. Yeah. She goes up and she checks out this robot who obviously doesn't notice that she's there. He's, you know, doesn't even care. He's just going for the jewels. So he opens this little dump truck up and is putting the jewels in there. And Lois Lane, of course, is going to climb up and look inside the dump truck and fall in because, mm-hmm. of course, she's Lois Lane. Yeah, and she gets taken to the evil lair, and then of course Superman has to save her. In every episode too, they do the this looks like a job for Superman.
Superman. That's where that verse came from because the bit, right?
Yeah,
and then that's that high to low pitch. You know, I'm Clark Kent, but now I'm Superman.
Yeah, yeah, I love the change though because it is this looks like a job for Superman.
And magically he's changed into his new clothes.
Yeah. One other thing that I was going to mention, I forgot to mention when we were talking about the first episode, the mad scientist. Did you notice the mad scientist had a bird that his little bird sidekick? And it got me thinking about all the bird sidekicks that are in Disney, you know, it's Aladdin, or
Iago.
Yeah.
He has Iago.
And then the Raven, Maleficent. There is one. Yeah, but there's one in Mulan too. I mean, there are so many bird sidekicks, you know, and I wonder if this is like, because, you know, Disney and the Fleischers were, you know, they were direct competitors. And I wonder if they took this from them because, you know, this is way early on. And if you watch that bird, it acts like the Disney birds. I mean, it's right behind his little master, and he's, you know,
it's doing not an stuff. Incidental bird.
It's yeah, an exactly.
Bird. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No birds of incident here. only birds of intent.
Let's see. Let's look at the episode list. There was some couple more that I really liked. The Bulleteers. The of course, you know, thieves, bank robbers. And they had a bullet car, you know,
as you do.
And all three of them would get, you know, packed into the little bullet car and they'd ride into town. And then all of a sudden it would transform into this bullet that would just shoot through buildings and stuff.
Kind of think about it with an apparatus like that. If you had just spent your money more wisely, you wouldn't need to be robbing banks, because your first failure was making the bullet car, because that had to be an obviously expensive and time consuming endeavor. And if you turned that money that you were using to build your car into just your money, then you wouldn't have to build a car to rob a bank. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Criminals not known for being super smart. Right? Long-term plan. They're not good long-term planners.
Well, I mean, they're smart enough to come up with these electromagnetic rays and bullet cars and, you know, these drones that can fly around. It's like, you need to put your efforts elsewhere, sir, because crime is not the answer. You've obviously got the brains, you know.
Well, and why wouldn't the government be keeping track of these folks? And be like, well, we should hire them to make these great things for us, but as weapons instead.
Well, they all have evil lairs. I mean, nobody knows where the evil lair is. You know,
where do you send the letter of, the letter headhunting to, you know, recruitment letter? Where do you send that to? By owl, like Hogwarts? I don't know.
Yeah, that's actually pretty funny.
Bullet car?
There was one episode where Lois goes she wants to talk to the mad scientist, and obviously she just knows where the lair is, and not only that, she knows how to fly a plane. She gets her little headgear on and flies a plane to the evil lair. Like, first of all, how do you know where it is? And Lois, when did you learn to fly a plane?
She's Lois Lane. She just knows these things, you know,
because if you'll remember in the Kirk Allen series that we watched, Jimmy knew how to fly a plane. So is this just like a regular thing that Americans used to know how to do, like in the 30s and 40s? Well,
flight was still nascent then too, and there was fewer regulations. So it was, you know, maybe you didn't even have to train to fly a plane. You could just be like, okay, let's see how this goes. You know,
maybe you don't ever want to be the
first person to have to figure out landing, you know?
Maybe there were no regulations. I mean, that makes sense. You know, it's like,
you know, these crazy women fly us, picking up the skies.
In the 50s, they realized, man, we're having a lot of plane crashes. Maybe we should like make these people get licenses.
Maybe we should make sure they're qualified before we let them put tons of steel into the air. But yeah, it's that, and I guess too, you know, Lois's powers are adjustable based on the situation. Whatever we need from Lois Lane, she can fly a plane now. You know,
yeah,
of course she can.
So yeah, those were really my favorite episodes. You know, like we said, when it gets been to the back half, the tone changes a lot. It's a lot of propaganda. They just didn't seem as fun to me.
The thing about it is the unfortunate elements, the racist elements in those didn't have to be there. It could have been you're just generic, you know, generic bad guy still. It didn't have to be politicized for the story to work. And in fact, for us these days, those elements take away from it because, we as modern audiences understand why we should feel uncomfortable watching that. It's still there though. They haven't pulled them from circulation. And that is, you pick any medium from the 1940s while World War II was going on, and it'll be a challenge to find, you know, a 100% lack of propaganda. We were fighting a war and we were trying to win. And these were easy ways to, you know, these things were going to get people's attention. And it's going to be a way to remind them that we, you know, Superman is a hero and we are in a fight. But those things, you know, these days could be just any random bad guy. It doesn't have to be a particular nationality to make the story more menacing, as it were.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have all kinds of respect for the Fleischer brothers. I mean, obviously some things went wrong and whatever, but you know, when they were in their heyday with Popeye and Betty Boop and these cartoons and the couple features that they did, they just, they did, they did great work, you know, mm-hmm. and they didn't need to use the propaganda or the racist tropes. I mean, it just gives me that much more respect for them, that their cartoons they did with Superman were all fantastical, with mad scientists and you know, jewel stealing drones. It wasn't anything to do with anything else, man. It was just pure sci-fi fun. And I know, those first nine, I just love them to death, man. I'm so glad that I went back and watched them as an adult now. Because I think now that I actually, you know, I have them on DVD. I sent you that picture. Yeah, I found them. I found these on DVD for $2.99, folks. You know,
that's a bargain.
I was in a video game store and they had DVDs and I was like, huh, I wonder if they got any Superman stuff. And you know, lo and behold, the next episode we're doing is on the Fleischer Brothers. And one of the only Superman DVDs they had was this collection. I was like, ha, how serendipitous. Yeah.
That's kismet for you, buddy. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got them off of iTunes but I would like to let the listeners know, our little public service announcement here, that they are in the public domain, which means you can find them for freebies on the internet and not feel bad about watching it. You check them out on the Wikipedia, there's a link to their location on the Internet Archive, and you can totally watch them for frees.
Yeah, and they're on YouTube too. I mean, if you just search, you know, Fleischer Brothers cartoon, there's a compilation, a 2-hour compilation of the whole thing. And like Dan said, you don't have to feel bad about watching it because it's public domain. So. Yep.
What is anybody public who has domain? That doesn't even happen anymore.
Yeah, right. But if you haven't seen them, I recommend, you know, taking the time to at least watch the first, you know, few of them. The first five or six of them are the strongest. But the first nine are definitely worth checking out.
And pick up the back nine too, but be warned, that's where things take a turn and you've been made aware of what to expect. So, they're not without their merit. I mean, just like anything, it's worth considering. But yeah, I'll ditto what you just said there, my dude, is that, the top nine are, they're foundational Superman content. Let's be honest what it is. You know, obviously Our Man of Steel wouldn't be who and what it is today without the influence of the Fleischer Brothers.
Yeah, absolutely. And the influence, I think, it's so apparent with Superman the Animated Series and Batman the Animated Series.
The animated Superman, the modern DCAU animated Superman is 100% molded out of this clay. And that they weren't shy about making that point. You know, they knew. They want us to talk about it like this. These creators, hopefully they love these properties as much as we as fans do. They just have a cooler job about it. And but you know, it wasn't a mistake that modern animated Superman looks and feels like that same character. And those cartoons, the Adventures of Superman cartoons, they feel in that same category as these first nine. It's just fun to watch. You know, it's fun to watch because he's doing the Superman stuff. Definitely, listeners, if you haven't already, go get them. And I mean, that influence is still being noted today. I mean, like we said, with the pilot episode of Superman and Lois, here we are calling back, you know, 80 years to the Fleischer Brothers.
Well, I mean, that's kind of a segue into next week or next episode. I want to talk about Superman the Animated Series, and they're all on HBO Max. So, you know, you and I can get a list together of the
Oh, I'm sure there's a huge watch list out there, folks. And when we find one that we agree to, we'll post that to the Twitter account so you guys can do your homework and be ready for the next episode that we're going to do here.
Since they've been on HBO Max, I've watched them a lot. It's kind of one of those things. It's like Star Trek, The Next Generation. I put it on when I go to bed, you know.
Yep.
It's one of those things that I can, you know, pay attention to, half pay attention to. And it's great background noise.
Exactly.
But But yeah, let's get a good.
And that's why I'm going to need a list, because that's the only way that I've really watched the Superman animated. The more recent one is on in the background, and just have something to be like, oh yeah, Superman, and sit down for 10, 15 minutes and then be able to go do something else. But with a watch list and some homework to do, I'm sure there's scads and scads of great episodes in that library. Did you want to talk about a little bit of the sad news, a little bit of sad news,
yeah,
segue into our sad news or news in general?
Yeah. You know, last episode we had sad news. I want a Superman news that's happy.
That's but happy.
Unfortunately, yeah. 2 episodes in a row we've got sad Superman news. Richard Donner passed away. I mean,
in the interim. Yeah.
What do you say, man? I mean,
what I say is I of course, the two obvious films that matter, but I hadn't really known all the other movies that are influence on us that he was responsible for. The Goonies, Lethal Weapon, tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of films that you've all seen and that, you know, matter to our pop culture, and this man was responsible for. But to this show's mind, there's only one that matters. I mean, he taught us that a man, you know, he made us believe a man can fly.
Yeah,
he'll always have done that.
I thought that your tweet that you sent out said it best, and that's just thank you, Mr. Donner.
Yep. What else can you say?
Not much.
And you know, in the back half of our years on this green rock, we are going to have more and more of these kinds of news as our heroes fall away. Because that's just the relentless march of time. But it's never going to, you know, he was, you know, a well-lived life. He was 91, I believe it was. But it's never not going to be, it'll never be enough when we have, we will have this discussion again, hopefully years and years from now, when John Williams is likely to pass. But you know, God, what we were given by these artists while they were here, what we can do to appreciate that art while we're here, and hopefully add a little to the posterity of it, right?
Absolutely. I don't know why you put that bad juju out there for John Williams. We'll just ignore that.
We'll just pull that back. Let's pull that back. I said several years, up to a decade at least.
But anyway, Dan.
John Williams, first human to live to 300 years.
We did it again, man. We talked about it again.
Oh, man. Yeah. We do it every day, but sometimes we press record.
Yep, that is true. That is very true. Well, I mean, I had a blast talking about this. I had a blast watching these. Like we said, anybody who hasn't seen them, please, for your own good, go out and watch them. They're great. Mm-hmm. We'll be back in 2 weeks or so, unless we screwed up like we did last time.
Sleep is so rude.
Yeah, right? But yeah, join us next time. We're going to be talking about Superman the Animated Series. But for now, up, up, and away, right?
Yeah, look to the skies, friends.
All right. We'll see you next time, guys.
Good night.
Yay!
We did it, bro.
Personally congratulate you on your completion of this achievement unit.